Welcome to the Snack Bar Games Podcast, your source for community and all things gaming.
Welcome to Snack Bar Games Podcast. We have a special episode, episode 243. This week we are celebrating the site's 10th anniversary. With me, as always, are Sean and Andrew, and joining us for this episode are Chris and Mike. Hey, guys.
Hey.
How's it going? We just kind of want to use this episode to talk about this site. I personally am interested in a lot of, you know, just how it came together.
Why did you make the site?
Let's rewind. Yes. Back to the summer of 2002. Mike, myself, and a gentleman by the name of Shane Quast we were sharing an apartment.
Yep.
And we pretty much spent most of our free time playing video games. And I believe at that point we were playing Halo pretty much around the clock. Does that sound about accurate, Mike?
I would say Halo and also StarCraft, whereupon when we would start getting rocked, we would then start trolling people.
That's right. So,
yep. Yeah.
So you have three guys, heavy gaming, going along around the clock. And, you know, Mike is actually a graphic designer.
Yeah.
Shane was kind of a web designer and I was a software developer. And we really kind of had a focus in doing stuff on the web. And, yeah. You know, back in 2002, the web was not new by any stretch of the imagination, but, Penny Arcade existed, you know, all your major gaming sites existed. And we had, you know, the talent in that one apartment to kind of throw something up on the website. So we had this crazy idea of starting a gaming website. So we spent the summer, I don't think we actually got serious until about September. It took us about 3 months to stop playing video games long enough to actually, you know, build something.
Yeah.
The original site was all static HTML that we updated manually, which was horrible. Early December 2002, we got the first version of the website online.
Yeah. So you mentioned Penny Arcade, and I think I want people to have the story for why there is a hyphen in this URL.
So the hyphen is there simply
editor's
because...
question number one. I'll get to number two in a second.
So
I've always, that's funny. Hold on 1 second, Chris.
Go ahead.
I've always wondered the same thing. As a matter of fact, when we did our podcast, I would always mock it and say, you know, you can visit our website, go to snackbar-games.com, you know, whereas upon Marco would be like, you don't spell the word hyphen. It's the special character. And I would always tell people snackbar-games. That always drove me nuts. So that's an excellent question. I don't even know the answer to that question.
So, Chris, is it your fault?
So, so I think it may be my fault. It's either my fault or Shane's fault. So now here's the backstory, right? So if you hear the guys at Penny Arcade talk about why there's a hyphen, it's because pennyarcade.com was actually taken. So they couldn't use it. That's what they wanted to name their site and their comic. So they registered the hyphenated version. Yep. The ironic thing is we actually own snackbargames.com without a hyphen. I don't think
we
actually even looked to see if that domain was available. We just determined, hey, if it's good enough for the guys at Penny Arcade, it's good enough for us. So we registered the domain with the hyphen and slapped it up there. I don't think it was until 2 years later that we actually registered the non-hyphenated version and set up a redirect. There is not a good reason other than the fact that now we've been using it for a decade and it would be really silly to go ahead and change that. So you can blame Shane and I for that. I don't remember whose call it was, but, that hindsight being what it is, non-hyphenated domain names, are the way to go.
Yeah. Second editor's question, just to get it out of the way. Snack bar. One word. Why?
So there's an interesting story behind this.
I want
to
hear it.
I do know this one.
Okay.
So you remember it? You want to tell it then?
No. You tell it just in case.
In case you have it wrong.
A lot of those 20s are also for me. So.
Okay. So as best I remember it, so we had this great idea to start a website, right? We wanted it to be like kind of a bloggy style. video game review site.
Yeah.
But we couldn't come up with a good name. And so I think Shane was watching cartoons one day.
Yeah.
And the show Two Stupid Dogs came on. And I actually, before the podcast, I went and looked up the episode. There was an episode, I believe it was called At the Drive-In. Okay.
Okay.
Now, in that episode, they keep using the term snack bar, snack bar, snack bar. And so Shane, fresh off watching that show, kind of walks. I had the downstairs bedroom at this apartment we lived in, and they had the bedrooms upstairs. So he walks into my bedroom and says, "What if we call the site Snack Bar Games?" And at the time, okay, yeah, I guess we could do that. Does that kind of jive with how you remember things going down, Mike?
Yeah, that's exactly. And that would also, we tried to, this is so, I mean, you look back on this, it's so dumb, but we also tried to have everybody that registered have like some sort of snack item for a gamer tag.
Yeah.
So, because I was pickle and he was snow cone and Shane was soda and then Marco was pretzel. And it was, so try to carry on a theme. Looking back on it, that was total lame sauce, but yeah, that's how.
Pickle. Well, I don't know.
Apartment, I had these giant jars of pickles, like these movie pickles, and I would eat like three pickles like every 10 minutes. So snack bar. So we like to snack. And
Your name was about the only one that was truly fitting. The rest of us just kind of picked random names. And, I remember the early days, the most interesting part about having those names was, that's what we used on the website. We didn't use our real names.
Right.
So nobody knew me as Chris. They knew me as Snow Cone or Cone. And so if you go back and look at the early days where we were heavy in the Penny Arcade forums and when the Cheap Ass Gamer forums opened up, that's the monikers that we used. So that's what people knew us as. So the only problem with that is when I would send an email to a PR rep or somebody in the industry, I had to use that name, otherwise they wouldn't correlate it back, and I felt silly. I felt silly, having the email address snowcone@snackbargames.com and trying to connect with people who were, these were industry professionals, and trying to contact EA or Microsoft or Nintendo and be like, "Yeah, I'm Snow Cone," and just imagining what was going through the mind of these PR people as they were like, "Why did you pick that name? Like, for real?"
Yeah, actually, funny thing along the lines of that is one time we also were really close with EB Games back before GameStop kind of swallowed them all. But we would hang out there all of the time. So I would send, my mom was like, "What do you want for Christmas or what should I get people for Christmas?" Like, go to my EB Games that I go to and go, do your Christmas shopping there if you want, just give me a gift card for some new Vidya games or what have you. And my friend, and then my mom told me, it goes, "Is your name Pickle? Do they call you Pickle?" I'm like, "Why?" They keep referring to you as Pickle. And I don't think they knew your real name. And I had to put two and two together. I'm like, so there's people out there who have no idea that my real name was Mike.
So. Yeah. I mean, I think, the thing about being around for 10 years is I think there was a lot more of that, like, alias thing going on around 2002.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, especially, like, you point out, like, Penny Arcade. Like, for the longest time, they were Gabe and Tycho, and they still kind of have those alter egos, but, like, you know who they are now, and they've separated from, it's still fun to look back. But, yeah, any explanation at all as for why you decided snack bar was one word instead of two words, which is correct?
and that part's, it's funny, too, because there's a lot of people who still call it snack-bargames.com. They put the hyphen on the, I guess you could argue whether or not that's the wrong place or the right place, but there's a lot of people. I never did go register that. So if you're looking to squat a domain and get some good traffic out of it, you might go that route. But, no explanation. I'd have to go back and find out, who actually sat down and registered it.
Yeah.
And I don't know that we had, we didn't have staff meetings. Everything was done over pizza in somebody's bedroom. So,
that sounds like the best staff meeting.
That's
more or less what was exactly happening. Somebody should, while they're at it, get -games.com.
Spell it all out.
Okay, so what other inquiring questions, right? We've been around a decade. Graham, you've been with us for a good portion of 2007? Is that when you joined us?
Yep, February 2007. It's part of the big merger number two, I believe.
Yep. Mike, you remember that time,
I still remember when Graham just came on and really took a leadership like a role. And I was still doing I was doing a podcast. We were kind of tapering that out, but I was still every so often writing articles, which now that you guys have this, you know, professional business way of doing it. I mean, site now it's really what you guys have done. Since I've retired the site, it's really heads and tails above what I imagined the website could have been. And I think that speaks to not only Chris's leadership, but I know that, Graham has a very significant role. And so I just wanted to give you guys kudos and everybody else that's on the call for, you know, just, it's awesome. It's cool to see. I still go to the website every now and then. I'll pop in, leave a comment on, your posts and stuff. And
yeah, it's always fun, man. We miss you.
Cool.
Yeah. That's
cool. Well, you know, we all grow up and it's funny.
wait. No, we don't. No, we don't.
I'm never growing up. I'm sorry.
We look at this site and we were a bunch of kids and we started this thing and we really don't know why. There was no professionalism whatsoever, but, it's cool to see what it's turned into now. I'm married and got my own kid and stuff. It's just cool to see what it's turned into now.
All right. So Mike, you mentioned some old content. So
yeah.
And the quality of that. So let's touch on that a little bit because you and I had a conversation about what some of the original posts, which by the way are hidden. Nobody can see them.
Unless they go to the Wayback Archive.
You can see some of our profanity laced rants about pretty much nothing. So those original days, and the funny thing is we didn't use subject lines, which made the transition to future, you know, systems a little bit more difficult from a technology perspective. But, you know, literally the posts, Mike, what are some of the early posts you remember?
I'm glad you asked. One of these, has anybody ever played Phantom Brave, those Nipponichi SRPGs?
Oh, yeah.
We have two of them.
Quite a fan of these days, though.
Okay. This Phantom Brave, they had this mushroom. And one time I left this long post that like tonight when I get home, this effing mushroom is gonna die type of, you know, and it was just so, it was about four paragraphs on how cheap it was that he'll pick you up and toss your guy off of the grid for an instant KO. Like every freaking time, it drove me nuts. That's the one I remember. I mean, you guys, I can't even begin to imagine like, what that post, if I were to read it today, I would probably just be so embarrassed. But yeah, it was a swear word every other word.
So I'm looking at the very first capture from the Wayback Machine right now.
Okay.
It's December 13th, 2002.
Yeah.
So it's missing a little bit in there. It looks like we ran our first contest on December 7th.
Was that the name of the lyrics?
Nintendo Breakfast Cereal commercial song.
Yeah, I remember that.
And you wanted to include a photo if they were a hot chick.
Right?
I think it's cute, Mike, that you thought that hot chicks were somehow reading our website 7 days into its inception. That's nice.
And that they would send him a picture if they were.
But yeah, even better.
Yeah, I don't remember. I don't think I got any submissions.
Let me go out on a limb, and I'm going to guarantee that you didn't. But yeah, so you can go back and look. Says recent articles. Yeah, please don't. Let's see. We all wrote welcome articles that were introducing these personas that we were intent on creating. And so let's see. Shane says, meat soda. Would you like fries with that? And yours, Mike, says, welcome to my article of doom. And then the very first review, formal review, on the website is for Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets on the GameCube.
Yep.
And I believe that was yours, Mike. That was the fourth article to appear on the website.
Yeah.
That is pure snack bar trivia right there. First review, Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets for the GameCube.
Now the very first article itself was not an actual review. It was looked like a 9-paragraph rant on why Shane thought that Jedi Knight 2 was a big pile of crap, based on his online experiences. And I'll let you go read, if you can find the article, some of the, interesting reasons why he thought that this particular game was not so great.
That was, wow. You know, then the nostalgia probably keep that game. I mean, that game was awesome. I don't know what he's talking about.
Yeah, I love that game. I don't
especially
know.
Especially when you modded it. Yeah, you can mod it. I'm like, hey, everybody, check me out. I'm Mark Hamill.
Yeah. I just liked going all lightsaber all the time. Yeah, this is a shooter, but no, this is a third-person lightsaber game.
Yeah, it is.
If you use the console controls, you can make it orange. It was fine. But yeah, wow. So I have Sean and Andrew here. You guys have some questions for Chris and Mike, because I have a few, but I think you guys could have some.
Well, all right. So looking back on the site and how it's kind of changed and evolved since the good old days, let's just call them. What would you say, just based on your observations, since, you know, Chris, you've been here since the beginning, and Mike, you kind of have observed since you left, you kind of continue to observe the site from time to time. Mm-hmm. What would you say, like, what would you say the biggest improvements for us, aside from maybe just using less profanity and using our actual name, what would you say are the biggest improvements for us have been, and how do you think you see the site continue to change and evolve over time? Like, where do you want to see the site in, well, let's say, the next 10 years?
Well, the first thing I noticed is right when I was transitioning my retirement, it's so weird to say that, but when I was transitioning my retirement, I believe, who's your editor? Isn't that Graham?
Yeah.
Yes. It yeah. is, yeah.
I remember when in the forums, in the admin section, they started to create an editorial process. And at that time, I worked for a news agency. It was very similar to how when we ingested news and got news from, you know, from various sources, the AP and stuff like that, how they had an editorial process. I was really impressed with that. Because that's something we had before. It was literally sent it to Chris, who – Chris is the smartest guy I've ever known in my life, but
that's absolutely not true. But dude, I appreciate it.
He can't walk at the same time without freaking falling on his face. Like, let's get like somebody who's, you know, because outside the realm of NASA and computer programming, somebody like a legitimate editor that can take like what the, you know, a good editor can make even me, you know, look good. It would essentially be rewriting my piece if I were still there today. Like, that was the biggest improvement. I saw that in its infancy, and I was very impressed.
Yeah,
and
I do have to give some of the credit to that to Mike Walbridge, who was briefly involved in the editorial process for about a year there.
He was the editor when I joined, or at least one of the main editors. Yeah.
So he instituted that process, and I definitely helped as much as I could, but. That was an interesting transition. I think a lot of that came from that merger with eToyChest in 2007. Jason Dobson came in, and he had his editors from his site, and then very gradually they tended to go their separate ways. But then we had these people who we need editors, we need an editing process. so it kind of stuck, outlived a lot of those people.
Yeah, so interestingly enough, your Graham is actually our third editor. So, you know, if you want a little bit of trivia, way back in the day, Mike worked with a gentleman by the name of Andy Karam.
Oh, yeah. How do I forget?
And so he was a technical writer for the military, and he did our original editing on the weekends. We would get the articles, we'd send them to him, he'd do his thing, and then I'd get them posted on the website. And him and his brother Matt were big movie buffs, so in exchange for doing the editing, we helped them stand up a movie website.
Movie Thunder.
MovieThunder.com, which is now defunct, and I think it's a Russian movie trading site. So
didn't renew that domain?
No, they let that go, so... and then
always had flights of fancy where we'd bring that back for something dumb, for some stunt sometime, but no, oh well.
Yeah. So Mike Wahlberg was number two, and then for a brief period, and then, Graham stepped in, and that's when, our editorial content really took a turn for a more professional approach, up to that point. I think
more harried, having frenzied approach.
Yeah.
More anxiety-inducing site.
But as far as – so let me answer the original question. Yeah. As far as the biggest change, you know, I think it, if you go back and look at where we were in history, right? So we started, with, three guys, and then there was a brief period of time in there where, from an editorial and content perspective, it was all me. Mike had kind of phased out some of his writing. Him and Marco were focusing on the podcast, but any writing, news, reviews, and everything actually came from me. And then I think that was what got us into, I think we may have merged with, Wayne Finney's Disc Read Error first. I don't remember exactly what year that happened. And then, the infusion of the eToy Chess crew, it was really kind of the pivotal turning point. You know, Jason had really taken eToy Chess and established it as a pretty big contender in the indie, gaming side. It was kind of the bar that we held ourselves to in those early days. And, you know, he had this vast network of contacts in the industry and, yeah. You know, it was what we were kind of aspiring to. So I think having that talent infused with, you know, the commitments and the model that we had created, they were both volunteer driven websites. But we had the desire to not ever let it die. And so, you know, Jason, once he saw that, kind of, I think he felt comfortable letting us, you know, take what he had created and continue to drive it as he kind of shifted gears and where he was going. So, I think that was kind of the pivotal turning point. And so from a content perspective, that's when things really started to improve. Cause if you go back and look at the FAQ or About Us page on the original version of the website, our intent was to do editorial coverage, but it was also to create an online community. And right. what I don't think we realized at that point was, you know, that content pulled people to your site and helped establish that community. So we were really following the lead that Penny Arcade had set up. And then you look at sites like IGN, GameSpy was still around with their super bright green website. And all those places had these.
They exist.
Yeah, they exist.
Yeah.
They're barely there. But they're
there. Yeah, I'm looking. Yeah, they still got green. It's not quite the same shade, though. It says powered by IGN, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, we were really trying to follow the lead of the big sites. I think that's kind of how we viewed ourselves, even though it was the three of us in a tiny little apartment and we were, you know, just trying to do the best we could. But, I think that eToy Chess merger was really when things, once we realized that maybe we weren't growing a community. We were really focusing on editorial coverage. And, that's when things really, you know, kind of took off.
Yeah.
As far as looking towards the future, you know, I think we're on the right path. I really do. You know, earlier this year, I guess it was this fall, Graham formally took the position as editor in chief. So, you know, he's really at the helm. So, that was a really tough transition having run the site for effectively 9.5 years. And then feeling comfortable letting somebody else kind of take it and take it to the next level. And I think, Graham's the right person and there's nobody else that I've gotten to the point where I trust to kind of take this baby of mine, that Mike and I have.
Don't leave me with your baby. Created. Don't.
But it's true. I mean, you've shown that level of passion around what we do at Snack Bar Games that kind of embodies, that innermost spirit of what kind of the essence of the website, if you will. You know, you were really one of the first people to come along and show that you cared at that higher level. So, you know, I'm eager to see where things go and continue to be involved as much as possible. So.
Well, aw shucks.
Yep, I kind of mailed in that answer. I didn't
get
a clear
one. Don't go anywhere. Don't leave me.
Not going anywhere.
Okay.
I don't want to be the coder for the site.
we're all good. I think WordPress is suiting us fine. We're not trying to hack together the custom CMS in the garage. I think we're better for it.
That was fun though.
It was, yeah, fun. Fun. That's one of the words.
Are you using air quotes?
Yes.
I can see your
feel
feet,
them.
So.
Yeah. As someone who had to put content in and then hope that when you submitted it, it didn't.
It saved?
Delete. Yeah. yeah.
Was this before the one we had before WordPress, or was this the one
this
before
is
right
the
before
one,
WordPress?
Yes. That
was awful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I put in a bunch of stuff when I was doing news there. That was horrible.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it was fun though, right?
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's like playing the lottery with your right.
I had a live bug testing team that could test things in production for me. That was awesome.
Yeah, yeah. Great. Before I forget, since you brought up the merger with Discrete Error and more snack bar trivia, Chris Ingersoll wrote for Discrete Error and is still with us.
These years later, I think.
I don't know why he's still. I'm glad he puts up with us.
Because he's awesome.
Yeah. But, okay. So one thing I do want to hear more about from you, Mike, is the old podcast. Now, we do something a little different here. We don't really have, honestly, the skills that you guys had with hosting and production. So we do what we can. But the old podcast, you guys put a lot of work into that. And how did that come about?
Well, I'm glad you asked. When I started phasing out my writing, I could contribute to – I have a multimedia background. I mean, I'm a graphic artist and web designer, but my passion's always been with multimedia. So we had a close friend that grew up with us. It wasn't an initial part of the site, but he, for all intents and purposes, Chris kind of made a little division called Snack Bar Media, and that was Mark's baby. And now he's a RTF major, so graduated from the University of Houston. So, you know, it's both his blessing and his curse. The reason why it didn't last as long, although we did it for how long, Chris? 4 years?
Yeah,
something like that. We had off and on. Interesting story before you continue with the background is, we were one of the first podcasts in the San Antonio, Texas area. And so you guys actually got featured on the front page of the Metro section, the San Antonio, Express News. And I actually still have, the newspaper clipping. So,
I want to see
get
that.
A chance. I've got it in a box. I will scan it in. Okay. I think there's also a clipping, of when we hosted, the Halo 2 launch party. We can come back to that.
So Marco did this, and he's a real perfectionist. I mean, he had a soundboard.
You can tell.
He had a soundboard. We had another friend, Christian. It wasn't particularly part of the website because he's too high school quarterback for us nerds, but he worked at a radio station in Austin. He did our intros and our outros. You know, so these were all industry pros, and I was just, you know, I was the personality, and Marco was the host and also the editor. So he had the soundboard. We would go to his work. He worked at a church, and they had a sound room. I mean, I kid you not. It was all 100% professional. He took forever to edit it because it was, you know, Chris would always like, when are we going to get it? When are we going to get it? When are we going to get it? So that was like his blessing and his curse. And, the show had all of that going for it, but it became such a giant chore for him, due to all that. And Chris is like, dude, be on Skype. I'm like, can we record this? I think honestly that makes for, it's easier. You can get multiple people. We could never get multiple people unless they were in studio with us that, the way that, this one seems to be going now. It's just, I just showed up, dude, I'm in my room. And I, you know, I think it's fine. When you have, I think as much of a blast as it was, we both tried to make it a radio show, but it was really kind of a podcast, you know?
That thing was a radio show.
Yeah.
It was
fun. It was pretty great. You know, so awesome. It was awesome, but. Yeah, I think that vibe didn't suit for longevity is what I'm trying to say.
We were a lot of work.
Yeah, we were achieving the production levels of a professional quality audio program, and we were trying to do it. Were we doing it every week?
Well, that's every the other thing. Week. We couldn't be due to Marco's like sometimes right. He's not even on here. I'm not dogging him. I'm just saying that. Due to the production value and everything, we did it from every other week. We tried to do it once a week to every other week. Then we're like, well, we need to do a new format where it's shorter. Then we'd end up going long. And then, you know, not only would we would shoot one night and then it would take 2 weeks to edit and then upload. And then it was time to do the next one. So we were all over the place. We did it, once a month, twice a month. And then we tried to do. Like one a month, and then we did this one called Lifestyles. Don't ask where that name came from.
Yeah, I was wondering about those. I listened to those, like, what is going on that was with the Lifestyles?
A community in the field, kind of in the community type of show, as opposed to me and him going on about our games, which essentially boiled down to Oblivion and Battlefield 2, if anybody's familiar with the shows.
I don't know. The late episodes, you went heavy into Turok.
Yeah. I was like, seemed to be the only person that enjoyed that game.
You were.
But so that is what it is. I, you know, in my JRPG fandom, I don't know if that ever made it on a thing, but we were, we were able to play, you know, in another thing that was really advantageous. While doing the podcast, we also, like I mentioned earlier, we had a real big, friendship with the EB Games and their general manager who, he actually just passed away last year from leukemia.
No.
But yeah, but he, they really brought us in as part of their community. As a matter of fact, in the EB Games, now defunct EB Games, now GameStop, in their community corporate handbook, they were cited as an example of how to, you know, be in touch with the community, his store, because of the work they did with us. And, he was also, I think, in all of Texas. It actually might have been the Southwest region of the country. His store was the number one store. That just happened. That was just by accident, but he would literally give us games. I mean, I kid you not. It's so funny to say this now, but he would cut them open, let us take them home, let us play them. We bring them back, put them back in, and then reprint half of them and sell them as new.
I think there was a lawsuit about that somewhere, huh?
I don't know, but that's we got some of our games.
No,
Before Chris's business context, that's how we did a lot of our games. And we also were really one of me and Marco's friends owned, and it's still operational, the biggest LAN center. I mean, they have over 100 games. They do a lot of tournaments and stuff, and it's the Extreme Gaming Cyber Cafe still here in San Diego.
Yeah.
Every PC game you can imagine. That's where our Battlefield like fandom. We were the North American champions, me and Marco, North American champions for Battlefield Vietnam. I remember I won like a $700 video card that I sold on eBay. So we got a lot of hands-on time with games that was completely free. And then we could talk about it, you know, with Marco's podcast. And that really is how when you take Marco's background and his professionalism and the fact that we were oozing free games and free play, all sorts of stuff, really is what reason we to do the podcast. So that was a long story of what we were doing. So, but that's in essence, that was it.
This would be the time for long stories, so it's all right.
I miss it, but you know, I think you know, us retiring hasn't been a detriment at all to the community at Snack Bar. Yeah. That was my biggest concern. I remember talking to Chris about it, and he was like, no, I understand. You know, if you want to move on, I was just about to get married. And I was like, you know, I actually don't find myself. I only play a few games. That was just the shooters with my friends now and stuff. So, you know, I remember having that talk with Chris and then having to have that talk with Marco. And he actually, when I decided to retire and not do the podcast anymore and I informed him, I think it was actually like a weight off of his shoulders just because of the amount of work that he put into it.
Yeah. I find that a lot of people are really happy when they quit. It's great.
Well, I used to retire. I like to use the word retire.
Okay, retire. Yeah.
Whatever makes you sleep better at night, Mike.
Yeah. No, but
so if you're retired, that means you're never coming back, huh?
So you well, you bring up not playing mini games these days. Do you play anything now?
I do. I basically I only play online with my friends. I've got very few games now. I do play, you know, like anything with Metal Gear associated, I'll find the time to play it. But but yeah, right now I am all my waking time is dedicated to XCOM.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes, XCOM.
It really is fantastic. And I bought premium with Battlefield, and the only reason I've always kind of kept it, I have it on the consoles. I don't have a really great rig. I got all Macs at my house. But Battlefield, and I kind of invested premium. They've all been terrible with the exception of this new one that came out. It's actually pretty good, so I play that with – I have like five guys that I play. We squad up, and that's – you know, between that and the Lego games when my niece and nephew come over, that's shit.
Hey, it's
– oh, I'm sorry. In Borderlands. Yeah, I obsess okay. over it, so. I actually just beat Terramorphous completed first raid last week, so actually that was kind of cool.
Cool. Yeah, so, yeah, I can't. None of those games I can be like, Turok. I can't criticize any of those games. Those are all solid. XCOM. Yeah, yeah. I need more time with. I need to stop.
I remember not having Turok for very long. When I did the podcast, I was like, you know, this is actually a pretty good game, so on and so forth. And then I didn't remember afterwards trading it in. And then the people at GameStop are like, I thought you loved this game. I was like, eh.
Well.
Okay, so to be fair, Mike, I think that's the sentiment you shared about 95% of the games we played in the early days. I remember vividly going to PTB Games, picking up a couple of games, and being back there within 2 hours, just ranting and raving about what big piles of crap we had just bought, and, you know, so to be fair, that happened quite often.
Sure, if it didn't have Final Fantasy in the title, back then, at that time, a 22-year-old Mike, I really wasn't too interested.
Yeah. So I take it you probably don't play Final Fantasy these days.
No, I did the 13 and it was not good. Although not to say that my JRPG fandom still doesn't have a little piece of me. I've got Ni No Kuni fully paid for. So
okay.
Can't wait for that.
Yeah. I got to play it at the GameStop Expo here in Saytown, and was very impressed, and so should be cool.
Yeah. You know, I think the one thing, at least as far as things that I miss about the old days, not that I was part of much of them, you guys talk about how, you know, you guys have the community, and you guys had the EB Games, and you guys got together. Like, that's one thing we can't do now, because... We're not in the same states.
We're not in the same countries.
That's true. Not in the same continents.
We've got a bunch of Canadians on our staff now, like half the country.
We've been invaded by Canadians. I don't know how this happened.
No one expected it.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I mean that even when I joined, there was kind of that stretch, maybe between the eToy Chess guys and, you know, the Discrete Era guys. Wayne was in like Maine, and then we had Pinata, who was in Hungary, who was doing our news. He was the most prolific poster and probably the least proficient English speaker.
Mm-hmm.
He's really good. Really, he did. Look, I can't write those in another language.
He sent Marco a clip one time for our podcast, and
I remember that.
I think he sounded exactly as I thought a European Hungarian would sound in my head.
Yeah, I haven't heard from that guy in a while. But yeah, so, you know, like now, what, Chris Ingersoll is like an hour away from me, but then otherwise we have two guys in North Carolina, a guy in Virginia, a guy in Delaware, New Jersey, New York, Nova Scotia, British Columbia.
Did you already say Colorado Springs?
I did not. I was getting around to Colorado. We still have Justin, and occasionally Paul Bishop helps us out in Colorado Springs. Yep. And
Texas.
Well, sure. I'll talk about people who write about games.
So a good shout out if anybody's, or call out if anybody on the West Coast is looking to land with us,
like say we would LA love to or have San you. Francisco would be super helpful.
Because right now San Antonio, Texas, although I'd have to look at a map, either San Antonio, Texas or Colorado Springs is our West Coast office.
Well,
and
we have Henry's in Vancouver, so we have.
Well, that's true.
But that
that's true.
It's the West Coast of different country.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, hey, San Antonio, you guys get all the GameStop expos and the Cabela's trot tours, and
that is true.
It's really the center of the gaming universe.
It really is. I gotta admit that having a private showing of Cabela's.
Okay, tell the story. Yeah.
Okay, so so we get a call from the PR team that's repping the newest Cabela's Dangerous Hunts game. Okay. And so they are, I think they were doing some public showings, you know, a lot of those tours is, you know, because we've got Interstate 35 and Interstate 10 that crisscross right through San Antonio. A lot of them use San Antonio as a hub to get around to other parts of the country as they're kind of making their way through the East Coast and on over to the West Coast.
Right.
And so I think they were doing a stop here, either that or they were just traveling through. And so they contacted me and said, hey, we'd love, you know, we know you're in San Antonio. You know, we'd love an opportunity for you to check out the game. And so, I was at work.
Right.
And, you know, we have a pretty big parking lot, at the office that I was working at. And so I called them and I said, you mind driving over to my office and just setting up in the parking lot? And so they, you know, the PR team, the street team was like, yeah, we can do that. So they set up and, you know, called me once they were done. It took them about an hour to get the truck set up. And so think if you've ever seen those games to you trailers that come around, that's basically what it was like. And it was all themed with, you know, these, taxidermy style wild creatures on the inside with TVs and every yeah. version of the game, right? So PS3, Wii, and Xbox. And so I come down from the parking lot and I can see my coworkers looking out the window like, what on earth is that doing in our parking lot? And so I go out there and I spend about an hour playing just hands on by myself. And, you know, the street team's like, you know, you guys have people inside? You can send them out. We've got a couple hours. So we had, I work at Rackspace still, and, that's where I was working at the time. And so I, sent out a company-wide email, for all the employees in the San Antonio office and said, hey guys, I hooked us up with a private demo of, you know, Cabela's Dangerous Hunts, you know, if you want to head on out there. And I just remember seeing everybody kind of stand up and, you know, we just had floods of people heading out to the parking lot to go shoot wild animals. It was pretty incredible. It was one of the cooler things, that's happened.
I remember talking to you that day. Earlier in the day, you were like, yeah, they said they're going to swing by and I'll run down, you know, over lunch break and check it out. And, yep. and then I like, you come back and I was like, how was it? It's like, it was pretty good. I'm going to go back in a few hours. I'm like, they're just going to sit there.
Yeah, they hung out.
Professional street team is just gonna sit in your your office parking lot.
Oh yeah,
just there. Yeah. That guy is gonna come back.
Big shout out to Amanda Young, for hooking that up. It was the guys over at Sandbox that made that whole thing happen. And then so ironically, we almost had the Nintendo Street Team coming through. I think it was before that. Can't recall. It's been a while.
Yeah.
And they almost, they were running tight on timeline, so they couldn't make it happen, but they had my home address and were planning to bring an Airstream trailer, down and straight into my neighborhood and park it in front of my house so that I could play it. They got stuck and, you know, the timelines just didn't work out, but yeah, I almost had the Nintendo Street Team come to my house for a private demo.
That's incredible.
Those days are gone.
Those days just don't happen.
I don't think street teams are gonna. I don't know. I have a parking lot out here. If any street teams are listening, give me a heads up.
If you're looking for parking lots,
yeah, no kidding.
I promise there will be one guy here who will play the things. That's probably enough.
So another really neat story. Back in, I think it was 2005. Nintendo's PR is handled by a company called Golan Harris, and Nintendo organized for, I'm not going to use the term lesser media, but for what they deemed as the enthusiast market.
Let's be clear. You guys were using concession names for yourselves.
That is true.
With no title posts. So
that's absolutely true.
Lesser
so
media.
They set up this enthusiast summit.
Yes.
And they flew, I actually could not get off work to make it, but they flew, us up, to Nintendo headquarters.
Oh no.
For, I believe it was 2 days. Marco actually got to go, and, he came back and he had, I think he'd gotten a Game Boy Advance, he'd gotten some games, he went to the Nintendo, you know, corporate store and got to shop, and everything was dirt cheap. All the cool kind of Nintendo product that you can buy at Toys R Us and Walmart and all over the place, you couldn't find that anywhere. You had to buy it from places like eBay or somebody that had imported it. And so if you were big into games and you were a huge Mario fan, there were very few places you could actually get your hands on kind of some of that neat merchandise. And so he came back with a ton of it, and they actually had, custom Timbuktu laptop bags made up for them that said Nintendo on the front of them. And
oh,
so ironic, you know, yeah, this was way back in the day. So he got that bag, and I remember being so jealous because that was the one thing that he brought back that I really, really wanted. And I didn't say anything, just let it go. And so ironically, I was picking up some stuff from him the day he got married a couple weeks ago, and he was giving me some microphones back that they used to record the original podcast, so timely with those. And they were in that Timbuktu bag, and he hands it to me, and he says, "Hey, dude, I know you always wanted this. It's yours." And so it's actually sitting next to me on the floor as we speak. I'm looking at it.
Okay,
so,
hold on. He just now gave you the mics from the podcast. It's freaking almost 2013.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It took a little while. It took a little while to
yeah. connect. We might try to put that equipment to use at some point in the near future.
So the quality of at least a few of us may actually improve
yeah.
In the coming months.
We'll see. We will still sound stilted and generally bewildered, but it will be much clearer to you that we are.
So, I will never be bewildered again.
Yeah. Crystal, let's put it this way. He would remove the us and the ums. I kid you not.
Yeah.
You know, so he was.
Sorry,
you know,
guys. Sometimes I say um.
Oh, I do it. I just do it all the time. So yeah. That's a testament to how much work you put into it.
We tend to leave those in. But yeah, I think he's a crazy person.
Yeah, it's more viral video if you leave it in.
It adds to the experience.
Yeah, that's the experience.
Yeah, something certainly sick about it. but no, hey, one thing I'm wondering about, one of the earlier snack bar outings and one that our readers may actually know about because there's a nice gallery on our Facebook page. You guys went to some sort of local convention and gave away an Xbox, and I just think that's...
Austin Gaming Expo.
Austin.
Yeah, so the Gaming Expo. The Austin Gaming Expo was started by a few guys that ran a website called AtariAge.com.
Yeah.
And they were really focused on kind of vintage games.
Right.
And so I'm trying to look up the year. I think it was 2003. So we were in the first year. It was July 26, 2003, up at the Marriott in the Arboretum. And so I had come across Marriott. I don't know how that's relevant. I'm looking at a picture of the Marriott. So
okay.
Anyway, so I had come across a post in probably the Penny Arcade forums talking about it or something. And I'd looked up the website, and you know these guys were renting out one room at this hotel, and they were expecting, you know, just a couple hundred people. They were going to have an arcade tournament. You know, it was going to be a lot of shopping. So, like I said, a heavy emphasis on classic gaming, really centered around the Atari platforms of the day. And so I looked up what it, you know, what it cost to be a vendor. And I think the table cost $30. And so I just went ahead and paid for it. We didn't have a ton of money anyway, but I just paid the $30 out of pocket and came back and told Mike and Shane, I'm like, "Hey guys, I got us a table at the Austin Gaming Expo." And I remember they looked at me kind of funny, and the first question was, "What the hell are we going to do at the Austin Gaming Expo? We're a website." And I was like, "Well, I don't know. It was only $30. I figured we could figure something out." So we scrapped together the money to buy an Xbox, original Xbox. I think it was refurb, and I think it still cost us like $300 or $350. I don't remember what it was going for, but it was pretty significant, right? So we scraped together the money for that, and then I started – I think we had 2 or 3 weeks. I started calling marketing companies that did, you know, pens and mugs and all that kind of stuff, and I told them, I said, I got about $70. What can I make? And they said, you know, we can make you keychains. And so I found this – you know, this company that would make us custom keychains. And it was the old Snack Bar Games logo. And it was, you know, just the logo screen printed on white plastic and kind of cut out in the shape of the logo. And so they were long and super skinny. They were about 2 inches long. So they were really prone to breaking. And I think I ordered 100 of them. And so we gave them out at the show and we sold raffle tickets. I think they were $1 a piece. Or we did, you know, if you bought 10, you got them for $7 or something like that. And I think we took in like $350 or $400 in raffle tickets, and then drew a winner and you know, gave away an Xbox there. So there is a gallery of pictures from that day, and you'll actually see a really cool thing in some of the pictures. We actually made a Snack Bar Games sign. We weren't sure what the layout of it was going to be. So most expos and conventions now, you know, you've got the tubing with the curtains, and you know, the company will have some neon sign, or in the big booths, you know, just kind of Vegas style kind of in your face stuff. And we were really worried that nobody was going to know who we are. And, which I guess is still kind of a concern these days. But,
yep.
So I had this idea. We were going to build a sign out of wood. And so, you know, carved up a big piece of plywood and had my wife, who went by Dots at the time on the website. She's an artist, so I had her paint the Snack Bar Games logo. And so we built this big old sign. I didn't finish the sign until about 5:30 in the morning, the day of the conference or the expo.
Yeah.
I worked all night through it. So I slept from 5:30 a.m. to 6 a.m. And then we loaded everything up. Yeah, 30 minutes. Then we loaded everything up, left San Antonio about 6 a.m. and drove up to North Austin. So with speed limits at the time, it took us about 2 hours. So we got there about 8 a.m. and setup was from 8 to 9, and the show started at 9 or 9:30. So I'm running on 30 minutes of sleep, having worked on that thing all night. And the expo was like 9 a.m. to, you know, 5 or 6 p.m. And, you know, so you'll see pictures of the sign. It's actually, you know, you made a reference to my garage. It's actually in my garage as we speak. I have not gotten rid of it. It's I think it's just too cool. But, I think at about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, my ability to form coherent sentences somehow completely dissolved. I was not able, I would sit at the table and people would come by and ask, you know, hey, what are you guys, you know, what's going on over here? And I would just kind of mumble and look down at the table. I could not, my brain had shut off. I couldn't get words out. You know, it was a really cool event though. And I think they ended up with like 3,000 or 4,000 people show up, which, you know, blew the numbers that they were expecting out of the water. And they actually had a museum of every, gaming system up to that point. So it was a classic gaming museum. It was actually really, really awesome and quite a bit, a lot of fun. That's not grammatically correct, but I'm gonna roll with it.
I'll edit it.
So,
no, I won't.
So there's another interesting story that comes out of the Austin Gaming Expo in 2003. And yeah. Mike, do you remember we had a guy that was heavily involved with us at the time and was a patron of EB Games. His name was Chris Locker. I still work with him, but he went by the tagline of Grendel. So, he kind of hung out and, you know, came up there with us. And, at one point in the day, there was a game publisher or what they were. But they came by to talk to us and they thought we were a game developer. And so we tried to kind of explain this idea that we're in the gaming press, and apparently we did a really crummy job of kind of explaining what it is that we were there doing, because this young lady left kind of in a, you know, really kind of a hurry and was kind of pissed off. And so we're kind of trying to figure out what's going on, and so we sent Chris Grendel over to go talk to her. And you know, so he's standing over there talking to her, and he comes back and he's like, well, so I figured out what's going on, guys. He's like, she thinks you guys are game developers and she's pissed that you guys won't make a game for her. And so you can imagine we're kind of sitting at this table going absolutely confused why anybody would get, you know, I mean, aside from the fact that we've got games in the name of the company, like, why would anybody think that we were game developers? We're like, we're not showing any games off. We're trying to sell an Xbox, basically. So that was another really interesting event. So we ended up having Grendel as really one of our first. He never officially did anything with the website other than smooth over relations with some small developer. He was our first guy to kind of get us out of a sticky situation, if you will.
I remember I won a copy of DOA Extreme Beach Volleyball from a small Street Fighter cabinet tournament.
Well, congratulations, I guess.
Hey, there were some people that really enjoyed the physics engine in that game.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm sure
that's what they enjoyed.
Yeah. Just that. Nothing else.
Nope. Nothing else.
Any other stories? Anybody? Any questions, Sean or Andrew, you guys had?
I am curious. Chris, I don't know if Mike had anything to do with this or not. But when did you guys decide to do the cover project in addition to Snack Bar Games?
Yeah, so that's an interesting thing. That project, the cover project, originally started as a – it was something we hosted on Snack Bar Games. Back in 2006, I spent a ton of time hanging out on the Penny Arcade and the Cheap Ass Gamer forums, like all day, to just, you know, constantly checking them, because that was really the main method of kind of community and conversing with people online at the time. All these social media sites really hadn't popped up. And there was a small project that was started, and I can't remember the guy's name. He had started when the DS, let me rewind, when the DS shipped, people noticed that inside the actual game case, there's a spot for the DS card, but also for the Game Boy Advance games. And so one of the guys on the CAG forums thought it would be really cool to start scanning in the box art from his cardboard boxes from the GBA titles, reformatting them, and then printing them out and sliding them into DS cases and using those on his shelf, you know, because a lot of gamers still to this day like to display their game collections.
He's right. It's cool.
It is very cool.
Yeah.
So it's pretty awesome idea. So we didn't, you know, we didn't develop the idea, but their collection was starting to grow, and they were hosting them all in the forums. And so there was no way to search. There was no way to tell. And there was, you know, what games had been created for, and really, there was no good mechanism inside the forums for organizing that content. So, you know, Graham alluded to the fact that I enjoyed, you know, tinkering with custom CMS. So I actually built a page on the Snack Bar Games website that hosted all these. And it was just Game Boy Advance games at the time. And I think when we hit about 350 covers in there, we realized that it was probably something that needed to get spun off on its own. So spent a lot of time trying to come up with a good name for what we wanted to call that. And never really landed. Yeah, I was gonna say, I never did. But we settled on the cover project, and here we are 6 years later. So spun that off onto its own website, and embarrassingly so, I think it's running the original code base that I built for the first version of the website in 2006. But
you're working on something, right?
I've been working on something for about 4.5 years.
Yeah.
So at some point, you know, it'll get done.
I've jumped in with two or three different years of mock-ups.
You have, that's right. You've created two of
those. Those would have been good sites.
They would have been, both of them.
Chris, you forgot about that Tycho actually made a post and then linked the cover project from Penny Arcade.
He did. So, you know, the project got big enough that it was, you know, I'm a little bit biased, but I still think it's the best place to get high-res covers for your game systems. You know, there's a lot of places that host covers like that, but they have a focus on CDs or DVDs, and we're kind of in that niche where it's just games, and we have a really, really awesome community there, and, you know, just really passionate about preserving this artwork and creating high-resolution covers. So I'm looking right now. Today, we have 12,888 covers on the website for over 8,048 discrete games right now.
That's a lot of games.
It is.
That's a lot of games. We have 56 different categories. So each one of those categories just represents a different game system. So 56 different game systems, nearly 13,000 covers across 8,000 different games. And, you know, every one of those is in super high res, so you can print it out and cut it up and slide it in to a game case.
Now, one reason I think that you guys are better than the later cropping up competition, they're all, how do I put this, making money.
That is
correct. Doing so by making you click through an ad and click on an ad, and then you have the cover with 14 ads around it, and then it pops up another ad, and then you gotta click that, and then you gotta wait, and then you gotta download it, and then there are more ads. So guess what? You just come to the cover project, and like, you get the thing that you want when you find it.
It's crazy.
It's crazy talk. It's like, you ask for the thing, and then we show you the thing, and then you can just have it.
I don't believe it.
That's crazy.
Why would you ever show them what they actually wanted to get?
I know. It's weird.
So what,
and don't break it up over 7 pages. Or, you know, we do a lot of things that are to our detriment, but I believe for the greater good.
Yes.
But yeah, it also, like, I really like the templates that you guys have in the forums over Cover Project. I'm not involved in any of that, but I feel some bond to their mission. But no,
I'm curious, Graham, how many of their Virtual Boy covers did you personally upload?
You know, I own no Virtual Boy boxes or covers.
Whoa.
I have a lot of the games.
Okay, how many did you download then?
I don't have... if I could find a case that would, like, snap a Virtual Boy cartridge in, I'd do that. I used it for all of my GBA games and all of the games I happened to get in a function or form that were not complete. Also, I'm not sure the stats on that. I don't know if you know, Chris, but I would imagine that the Wii Sports cover is probably one of the more popular covers. Yeah, it's crossbow so training, all that stuff where they don't have like cases.
Yeah, so interestingly enough, we picked up the very first, I don't remember if it was a member of our community that that created that, or if it was somebody that uploaded it, but we've had some covers that have had crazy amounts of downloads. I actually have a script that that shows me the counts for that. So I'm looking right now, and it looks like at some point, New Super Mario Brothers Wii, somebody went a little bit crazy on the website because it's been downloaded 328,000 times.
Wow.
But that the seems original, like too much.
it probably is. Somebody probably tried to see what my bandwidth cap was for the month. But the original Wii Sports cover that we hosted had approximately 80,000 legit downloads from actual users. And then we had a lot of Beautiful Joe.
Hmm.
And then it all just gets mixed up in there. But trying to see where the crossbow. Yeah, it had a, looks like Link's Crossbow Training had about 17,000.
Yeah, anything where like you don't have covers for things, but yeah.
Yeah.
Those guys
but the site does really well, and you know, you kind of touched on it, Graham. It's really preserving that art, giving back to the community, and you know, never been out to make money. You know, with any of that, you know, it's not our artwork. And you know, we feel like everybody should should be able to benefit from it. So, you know, it'll stay online as long as the people that own the copyrights on the material let me leave it up on the website.
So,
to think if there's any other really interesting snack bar historical stories.
Hmm.
I mentioned earlier that we hosted the Halo 2 launch party.
Yeah. First video content on the site, right?
I think that was. And we actually, we actually were interviewed by Joe V from a local Fox News affiliate who was picking up his copy of Halo 2. And so we got aired on the nightly news for that. But it was actually pretty cool because back then they didn't really have midnight launches for like right now, you know, tons of stores stay open. But that really didn't happen, you know, even 7 or 8 years ago.
Right.
So when Halo 2 launched, you know, like Mike's mentioned, we were, you know, really, really close with the guys that ran that EB Games store. And so they'd gotten approval. I don't know if it was, you know, how far up they had to go to get sign off to do a midnight opening, but they were going to throw, you know, some type of a small party. So we pulled together as much money as we could, and we actually bought pizza for everybody that came to that EB Games, that night. So I think we ended up buying, I think my brother was working at a pizza joint at that time. And so I think we got pizzas for like $3. And I think we didn't get 100 pizzas, but we got somewhere close to like 50 pizzas. And, we had a massive number of people, lined up to pick up Halo 2. We fed them at the line started about 8 or 9 o'clock. The first guys that got there actually had an extension cord run, had brought a pickup truck and a TV, and were playing 4-player, you know, split screen of the original Halo, right there in front of the store. So it was, you know, one of the more epic events that, that we've ever, been involved with.
Yeah.
That was
pretty sweet. The only other really kind of, significant event we threw, and it, again, it had an absolutely horrible name, We're really not good at this whole branding thing, Mike. I don't we should go into that field. We had the one and only official Snack Bar Games meetup. Do you remember that, Mike?
No.
I am pretty sure you were there.
Was that Taco Cabana or something?
No, no. No, that was Taco Night, which was the same group of guys. That was a non-Snack Bar Games event. So we had a Snack Bar Games meetup event, and we invited – we literally posted the information on the website and said, if you want to come meet us, we met up at the Peter Piper Pizza on Bandera Road here in San Antonio, had pizza. We had about 30 or 40 people show up. Most of them were our friends. I don't know that anybody that was, you know, just randomly surfing the web saw it and actually showed up. And then we went and went over to Dave and Buster's and played video games for the rest of the night. And then we had Anuj.
Oh, that's right.
Who was I don't know if he was in Dallas or Austin.
He was
one of the big kind of community guys and really participated in the website a lot. And he actually made the trip down and hung out with us. I think he may have been the only person that we didn't know in person that showed up. So, but that was a cool event too.
Yeah, we got to do some sort of. There have been rumblings over the past year or so about mostly jokingly about some sort of snack con. or at least something where we get together and do some stuff that needs to happen.
Is that one word or two words, Graham?
It's one word because whatever, okay. We're dumb and we're just going to deal with it.
Okay.
I should go ahead and say right here that we will have four staffers at MAGFest in January.
Yeah.
I believe Lucas will be there and along with me, Eric with a C and Jeff. Yep.
I don't think Eric Twice is going to fly in from Spain. So.
No, but then we would have two Erics there. We'd have Eric and Eric Twice.
It's true.
I think if we had a snack con, I think we might get more people than that made it to PAX. I think we really would.
Okay. I think we can beat the Escapist Expo, but PAX would take a few years.
So that's the goal for the next 10 years. Big snack con.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
I don't know that we're going there.
What's our budget look like, Chris?
It's got one digit in it.
Okay.
So you can take your pick, any number you want.
Okay.
It's only nine. One digit though.
Okay.
Nine. Yeah. You got it. There we go. Your budget for next year, Graham, is $9.
Okay.
Make it happen.
I'll make that work. As always. All right. We've had a good time, but we should probably wrap this up. I hope we can keep going. And do you guys proud?
I've mentioned it earlier. I'm confident that we will. And, so we'll have another one of
hopefully.
These. It's scary looking at it though. 2022. So put it down on your calendars. December of 2022. It will be the 20th anniversary podcast or whatever type of media
we like,
use in 10 years.
Like a hologram cast.
If we stay around, if we stay around for 20 years, we need to have some sort of in-person something.
Yes.
That's got to be like in the same room video something.
We'll do a video cast.
Yeah.
We'll do a video cast if we make it another 10 years.
Yeah.
All right. That's a promise.
It's a promise.
We probably won't remember it, but it's a promise. So hold us to it.
But it's in stone. We're going to upload it to the internet, and it's going to be there for everybody to hear.
Yep.
Yeah.
Forever.
All right. So thanks, Chris and Mike, for joining us for this episode.
Glad to do it.
Thank you.
For Sean and Andrew, I'm Graham, and see you guys. Next episode is our first of our two-part Game of the Year discussion, so.
Can I weigh in on that real quick? XCOM Game of the Year, followed closely by Borderlands 2.
We will be talking about one of those games.
That's
a teaser. That's not public. But you guys know now, one of those games is one of our finalists. So, yeah.
Which one could it be?
Find out in like 3 weeks. Like just you'll find out. Don't worry about it.
Eventually.
All right. See you guys next time.
Thanks for listening to the Snack Bar Games Podcast. Follow us on the web at snackbar-games.com or on Twitter at snackbargames.